Blog Talk Radio.
Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. Hey, so very glad that you tuned in this morning, that you took a little time out of your busy schedule to join me on my program today, The Cross in the Desert. Well, today is the very last day of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, and that's where my wife has been with her friend Julie Prince all week. And last night they were there to hear Vice President nominee Mike Spence speak, and also Ted Cruz and the rest of the program, the different various speakers that were there, Laura Ingraham, many, many more, and they have had just an incredible time, an incredible experience. This is the blessings of living here in the United States, the blessings of democracy, the freedom we have as a constitutional republic in the transfer of power from the current president and have an election for the new president, and that's this year. And it is a tremendous responsibility. It is a tremendous freedom. And today what I wanted to talk to you about is our freedom, our privilege, and our right to vote living here in the United States. And I'm going to take a comparison of other countries like Iran, Pakistan, and North Korea, and explain the incredible difference that we have in voting compared to the forced elections and the tyranny, the dictatorship in those countries. They try to come off as having an image of democracy with their so-called elections, but I'm going to explain to you the difference. Now, why am I talking about this today? Because, and you've heard this phrase 100 times, we so take our freedoms for granted. And as I'm thinking about what Becky is experiencing this week, what millions of others like her are experiencing, it is the beautiful process we have. Not perfect, it has its flaws, but it's the beautiful process and privilege that each of us have to participate in electing the next president of the United States. Because when we look at other countries, it is far different. There is no real freedom in other countries, and we'll explain about that a little bit later. As we begin today, I want to make the case for why Hillary Rodham Clinton is not qualified to be President of the United States. And this is not a matter of back and forth political bickering, mudslinging, trying to scar someone's reputation. This comes right down to the core of the issue that we as Americans cherish the most, and that is our freedom. Now, Ted Cruz, who came in second place, who lost in the primaries to Donald Trump, talked last night about freedom. He talked about principles. He talked about voting your conscience. We have such a blessed privilege to do that here. But others in other countries don't have that cherished freedom. The nominee for the Republicans, of course, is Donald J. Trump, and tonight he's going to speak. In the fall, it will be Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And once again, we sharply differ with liberals on who Hillary Clinton is. We think that she is not qualified to be president. But again, here comes the wonderful privilege we have as Americans. We have the freedom to sharply disagree, but yet we have that precious freedom to go to the ballot box and cast our vote, and to know that it's not a rigged election, to know that it's not a forced election, but we are voting our conscience, and we have that awesome power that God has given us to cast our vote. But why is Hillary not qualified? I think there are so many ways I can answer that. She betrayed our national security. She lied about it. She is very, very dedicated to having refugees come into our country that could potentially become terrorists. She is not qualified for so many reasons. But what I want to do in the beginning right now, I want to lay the case for me personally. For a person that is an advocate of the women's rights in Iran and other countries, this is very dear to my heart, that these women have freedom. The Saudi Arabian women have the freedom to drive. The Iranian women have the freedom to wear whatever they choose and believe whatever they choose. And Hillary Clinton commends herself as being the champion of women's rights. And that is where her voice is the most silent. I want you to hear very carefully, I want you to listen very carefully to the case against Hillary that was recently displayed on the Sean Hannity program. I want you to hear these points because they're very important. Let's listen.
She has taken through the Clinton Foundation and donations to the Clinton Library. I want to go through this slowly. Stay with me. Mm-hmm. If you start with Saudi Arabia, okay, $25 million up to that amount to the Clinton Foundation, $10 million to the Clinton Library. Women can't drive. They need permission to work or travel. Marital rape not recognized. If you're gay or lesbian, punishable by death. No churches, no temples in Saudi Arabia. She takes their money. Go to Kuwait, up to $10 million donated to the Clinton Foundation. Courts deny women the right to become public prosecutors and judges. No laws against domestic violence or rape. And if you're gay and you're involved in a homosexual act, well, that's illegal and you can get 7 years in prison and a fine. If you go to the UAE, they donated up to $5 million to the Clinton Foundation. Men have the legal right to beat their wives with physical violence. Marital rape is not recognized. Same-sex marriage is illegal. All sex activity outside of marriage is illegal, and women are often punished severely for adultery. Then we go to Brunei. Money donated to the Clinton Foundation, up to $5 million. Marital rape is not a crime, as the wife is not under the age of 13. And if you're gay, those acts are illegal, punishable by up to 10 years in prison, in some cases death. Qatar, $5 million up to that amount to the Clinton Foundation. Marital rape, not a crime. The law states that it's a woman's responsibility to obey her husband. And if you're gay and you commit gay acts, punishable by death. Oman, up to $5 million to the Clinton Foundation. A woman's consent is not required to legalize a marriage. Marital rape is not a crime. If you're gay, It's punishable by up to 6 months to 3 years in prison. Algeria gave, what, up to $500,000 to the Clinton Foundation. Marital rape, not a crime. Married women under 18, they can't travel abroad without the permission of their husband. Homosexual activity is illegal, punishable by 2 months to 2 years in prison and a fine. And the Washington Post reports that many Middle Eastern countries donated over $1 million to the Clinton Foundation, as you can see up there on the screen. Now, I say all of this. She says she's the champion of women's rights and gay rights. And up until this week, she's never criticized the practices of this these countries and took their money. How corrupt, you know, is that hypocrisy in your view?
Sean, I have to commend you and your amazing team. You have just summarized with some very important data and research everything that the Huffington Post and the New York Times should be doing. If they actually believed in the values that they spout, they should have published what you just summarized in 3 minutes, and Hillary Clinton's campaign would be down in flames. She would be exposed for what she is, a person who loves power more than anything else and is prepared to say one thing while receiving money from the people who stand for exactly the opposite.
So seriously, if all the reports that we read, all right, that Donald Trump has trouble with the women's vote. Mitt Romney was excoriated because he had women's resumes and binders, women that he wanted to hire. Women are treated, discriminated against in all of these countries she took money against. Gays and lesbians are either executed or punished severely. They're mistreated. She claims to be their champion. If you're a Christian, you cannot build a temple. A church in Saudi Arabia. You cannot build a temple if you're Jewish. She claims to be the advocate, the champion of all of their rights. How do you explain the taking of money in this particular case?
Very simply, for the left today, not the Democrat Party of the 1960s of JFK, but for the Democrat Party today, reality is optional. It has been kidnapped by the Alinskyites. For them, it is just the cause. You say whatever you like as long as you can maintain power. It's not about truth, Sean, anymore. It's about staying in power and getting the millions. You've just proven it.
That is Sebastian Gorka, and he is a counterterrorism expert, wrote the book Defeating Jihad. This was an excellent presentation summarized very quickly by Sean Hannity on why Hillary is the number one hypocrite when she claims to be voices for women's rights and instead is taking donations, receiving donations from countries that oppress women. And so how can she be the champion for women's rights when these women are suffering? And in order to be silenced about their suffering, she receives what I call blood money. And she refuses to be a voice for them. And that's very hypocritical. And so this case again shows that the candidate, Hillary Clinton, is one kind of person publicly, but another kind of person secretly. She tries to hide her real intentions. And Sebastian Gorka summarized it well. It's all about power. It's all about certain causes. But it's not about truth. It's not about integrity. It's not about those women that suffered. And especially she is champion of so-called gay rights, but you can see there the countries that have donated money to the Clinton Foundation are those very countries that would oppress and or execute practicing homosexuals. So, again, maybe you didn't know this about Hillary. Maybe this is new to you, but this is public record. And she is quiet and silent when it comes to the rights of women, especially these women that live in Middle Eastern countries and are suffering under oppressive governments. And so it's all about money, it's all about power, and it's all about causes, but not about truth. 4 years ago, there was an attack on the consulate in Libya, and our ambassador, Christopher Stevens, and three others, Navy SEALs, were brutally murdered at a time when there should have been forces there to protect them and rescue them. Secretary of State Clinton claimed to the families that the attack on Benghazi was the result of a video, but that was a lie and was not the truth. I want you to hear another reason why Hillary Clinton should not be president, why she's not qualified.
Do you think she lied?
Well, talking with Ty's mom, I mean, she, you know, she watched the hearings and everything else, and then when that came out,
and Charles Woods,
I talked to her quite a bit, and yet she said, you know, why is she saying that when she told me to my face that it was they're going to get the guy who made the video.
Unbelievable.
The full truths weren't being told. That's why we did, and why we are telling the truth right now with the movie. And the
you guys. Just last week, Hillary Clinton claimed she never told the Benghazi victims' families a video caused the attacks. So what are these?
Some have sought to justify this vicious behavior along with the protest that took place at our embassy in Cairo yesterday as a response to inflammatory material posted on the internet.
The natural protests that arose because of the outrage over the video were used as an excuse by extremists.
We've seen rage and violence directed at American embassies over an awful internet video that we had nothing to do with.
Then, during her testimony in October, emails prove she knew it was a lie.
Within 24 hours, you had a conversation with the Egyptian Prime Minister. You told him this: we know the attack in Libya had nothing to do with the film. It was a planned attack, not a protest. Let me read that one more time. We know, not we think, not it might be, we know the attack in Libya had nothing to do with the film. It was a planned attack, not a protest. State Department experts knew the truth. You knew the truth. But that's not what the American people got.
Mrs. Clinton's lies are so entwined, it's hard to keep them straight. And she's running for president.
Could you vote for her based on you know she lied?
Well, I think if you're going to vote for anybody, first thing you should vote for them on is based on their ethics, their honor, and their courage.
And does she have that?
How do you feel about Mrs. Clinton's role in Benghazi? Share and comment below.
Hillary Clinton lied. Those families were tormented by the death of their loved ones, and she stood with them face to face and explained the reason for the attack was a video, and that is absolutely a lie, and she knew it. And the hearings exposed the fact that she was not truthful. Even to her own daughter, she called it a terrorist attack in a private email. And so here we come down to the reasons why she's not qualified. And the number one reason is honor and ethics. Lying. Can you possibly sustain and follow after a president who is not truthful, who does not tell the truth? Well, if that's not bad enough, what about a president that would put in harm's way our national security? And yet, that is exactly what Hillary Clinton did with having a private email server and classified documents in a chain were passed through that server with the potential of destroying and compromising our national security. And just recently, unfortunately, no charges were recommended against her, but FBI Director James Comey, in this little soundbite, and you'll see why, contradicts everything Hillary claimed about her honesty in coming up and being upfront with all of these emails. You're going to see in this little video contrast another example of why Hillary is not qualified to be president, because she lies and she compromises our national security. Let's listen.
That she never, never sent or received any classified information on her personal email. Watch.
I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified materials.
I never sent or received any classified material. They are retroactively classifying it.
From the group of 30,000 emails returned to the State Department in 2014, 110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined by the owning agency to contain classified information at the time they were sent or received.
They were classified at the time they were sent or received. This is not a matter of retroactive classification. That was another misleading statement from the Clinton camp. Next, Mrs. Clinton's repeated claim that she turned over all official emails to investigators and that the American people could trust her, that there were none lurking on her private server or inappropriately withheld from the State Department once she got caught with the problem, that she was hiding nothing. Well, listen to that.
I have absolute confidence that everything that could be in any way connected to work is now in the possession of the State Department.
The FBI also discovered several thousand work-related emails that were not among the group of 30,000 emails returned by Secretary Clinton to state in 2014.
In any way, it was turned over, except the FBI director says no. Some of these work-related emails she failed to turn over were actually also classified, according to Director Comey. Next, Mrs. Clinton said that she only used a personal email because she didn't want to carry more than one email device.
I thought it would be easier to carry just one device for my work and for my personal emails instead of two.
Secretary Clinton used several different servers and administrators of those servers during her 4 years at the State Department. And she also used numerous mobile devices to send and to read email on that personal domain.
Next, Mrs. Clinton claimed her unprecedented email setup was permitted by the rules.
It was allowed, and the rules have been clarified since I left about the practice.
None of these emails should have been on any kind of unclassified system. They were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information.
The FBI director went on to say that no reasonable person in Secretary Clinton's position could have believed that they were acting appropriately. Next, Mrs. Clinton has repeatedly assured the country that America's secrets were safe, despite their presence on her home server.
It had numerous safeguards. It was on property guarded by the Secret Service, and there were no security breaches.
We assess it is possible that hostile actors gained access to Secretary Clinton's personal email account.
Director Comey found the world's most notorious hackers knew about Mrs. Clinton's email and said it is conceivable they have everything, although the FBI is not able to prove that, he said. However, after all that, Director Comey said he had to conclude that the former Secretary of State likely committed no crime here.
In looking back at our investigations into the mishandling or removal of classified information, we cannot find a case that would support bringing criminal charges on these facts.
The director explaining that in similar cases, there has been evidence that the target intended to disclose classified material, that there was obvious disloyalty to the United States or obstruction of justice, none of which he found present in this case.
Well, there you have it. Point by point, everything that Hillary claimed was refuted by the FBI investigation. She was not truthful. She was not honest about her dealings with this classified information. Look, you know the state of our world. You see it every day in Russia, in North Korea, in China, in Iran. This administration has given over $150 billion in sanction relief money to a country, to a nation, to a regime that will use it for terrorism. And at the same time that our nation has done that in this so-called Iran deal, we have a former Secretary of State that was careless in the handling of top-secret classified documents and compromised our national security. This administration has to go. And this is another example of why Hillary Clinton is not qualified to be president, not only withstanding taking money, hush money, to be quiet in those countries that oppress women, and not only being not truthful about the Benghazi attack, and as a result of her non-involvement, four Americans die, and then lying about top-secret classified information on a private email and compromising our national security, any sane person would conclude that this person should not only not be president, but she should be in jail. She should have an orange jumpsuit just like everyone else, but the Clintons, once again, believe that they are above the law. So these are many reasons why she's not qualified to be president. But I think the top of all reasons, the core of all of this, is our security. this convention and this election really is about our security. And once again, Hillary is willing to let in thousands of unvetted Syrian refugees, and they could potentially become terrorists. She has publicly said, Islam is not our adversary. So you have just to answer one question. Do you want a president, when you see all of the things that she has done and all the lines that she has crossed ethically, would you want someone in the White House that opens our borders to terrorism? I want you to hear this soundbite.
Let's be clear, though. Islam is not our adversary. Muslims are peaceful and tolerant people and have nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism.
The shooter's name was Omar Siddiqui Mateen. An anonymous source told reporters that Mateen rented a car from Fort Pierce and drove to Orlando to carry out what local authorities have called a domestic terrorist attack. This tragedy is the most deadly mass shooting in American history.
Let's be clear, though. Islam is not our adversary.
Dr. Farouk Sakalishvar lives in Iran, according to his online bio, and he's been condemning homosexuals since at least 2013.
Death is the sentence. I mean, look, there's nothing to be embarrassed about this. But death is the sentence.
Muslims are peaceful and tolerant people.
You want worldwide Sharia, is that correct?
Of course, yeah. We believe that the whole world should be governed by divine law.
And you support the idea that women can drive, correct?
That's a Saudi rule. Although women can drive, it's up to the head of the Islamic State to decide
and you
how
believe
the rules
that
of segregation should be applied.
Muslims that leave the religion apostate should be killed.
Well, of course, the Prophet said whoever changes his deen, kill him. So this is the job of the state.
And gays and lesbians should be killed. I'm just reminding my audience of your position. Gays and lesbians, the penalty for that is death, correct?
Well, you know, if they do the act publicly and there are witnesses, it does carry capital punishment.
Islam is not our adversary. Muslims are peaceful and tolerant people and have nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism.
Eh bien, terroriste. Mort, s'il vous plaît.
ونعد الدول الصليبية المتحالفة على دولة الإسلام بأيام سود.
Wow. There it is. I need not add anything to that. It comes right out of her own mouth. And yet, if you notice in that little soundbite, if they are peace-loving people, why do they want worldwide domination and Sharia law imposed on every nation? Why do they kill adulterers, stone homosexuals? They are not a peace-loving people. There might be peaceful Muslims, but their creed is violent. Even though they may be ignorant of their own history and teachings of the Quran, again, there can be peaceful Muslims, but when you go to the core of their history and the core of their doctrine, it is anything but peaceful. And again, listen to this mantra that Hillary says, Islam is not our adversary. Nice, France, Orlando, Florida, San Bernardino, California, Paris, France. Do I need to continue to mention all of the cities that have suffered horrific violence by those supported by ISIS, those that are extremist Muslims? Do I need to go down the list? And would you want your president to continue the policy of Barack Obama that there are no radical Muslims, that they're not our true enemy? This is suicide. And so today, I hope I've helped you make a proper decision at the ballot box, but there's one more area to touch on. This weekend, a very powerful documentary is going to hit the movie screens of the theaters, and it's produced by Dinesh D'Souza, who has done documentaries before. He did 2016. He also did America, and I want you to hear about this new movie about the hypocrisy of the Democratic Party and Hillary. and it's called Hillary's America. I highly recommend this film. But let's go behind the scenes. Let's talk to Danoush. Let's listen to the trailer and get a sense of just how powerful this documentary is. Let's listen.
So Dinesh D'Souza is known for statement-making documentaries that deliver a jolt of controversy during key moments of a political campaign, and his latest project is no exception. In Hillary's America, D'Souza sets out to expose Hillary Clinton's motives by examining what he says is the history of her progressive politics. Watch.
Who are these Democrats?
Dinesh D'Souza was sentenced on Tuesday to spend 8 months in a confinement center.
It all began when the Obama administration tried to shut me up.
Your gang's all about stealing, man.
What did I learn? All crime is about stealing. The big criminals are still at large.
Didn't see any reason to keep them.
The system doesn't go after them. Because they run the system. It's time to go behind the curtain and discover the soul of the Democratic Party.
50 lashes. That feels. Come on.
The Democrats support slavery.
This Civil Rights Act will allow colored men to sit at the same table beside the white guests.
How many old Democrats who are now furnishing arms to the Ku Klux Klan?
To the Democratic Party.
Why has all this been swept under the rug?
To cover the tracks of the Democratic Party.
And we're not even talking about ancient history.
The racism continued well into the 20th century.
That as long as a black man continues to ravish our white women, we will continue to lynch him.
Gotta give them a little something.
Plantation politics.
The Democrats went from slavery to enslavement.
Corrupt big city bosses, that's how you get corrupt unions.
What does progressive actually mean?
Social engineering and social control.
The merciful thing that a large family does to one of its innocent members is to kill it.
The opening video of the Democratic Convention in 2012, government is the one thing we all belong to. Because, no, government belongs to us. We don't belong to it.
What are these Democrats hiding?
This is about buying and selling influence by foreign oligarchs and foreign governments. When you follow the money, there are very, very few coincidences.
What if the goal of the Democratic Party is to steal the most valuable thing the world has ever produced? What if their plan is to steal America? Who will stop them now?
Oh, my. So he's a fan of Hillary's, and joining me now to discuss it is the film's creator and executive producer, Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh, good. So you're open-minded. She might still get your vote, is what you're saying.
Well, in my Obama film of 4 years ago, I focused just on Obama because he was an unknown guy. No one knew much about him. In this film, we focus on Hillary, to be sure. But we also focus on the whole history of progressivism and the Democratic Party. So we're telling an unknown story of American politics, and it's going to roil up this race, I'll tell you that.
This is a point that we hear made fairly often about the Democrats' history when it comes to race issues in particular, and one that doesn't get, you know, that much of a spotlight. But today, you know, but if you listen to folks today, it's the Republicans. The Republicans are this racist party that's against blacks, and the Democrats are the opposite.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be the attack on Trump. He's a racist, he's a sexist, he's a xenophobe, he hates immigrants, etc. I think it's very important for people to know that the Democratic Party historically has been the party of slavery, of segregation, of Jim Crow, of lynching, of the Ku Klux Klan, forced sterilization, support for fascism, the internment of the Japanese after World War II. I mean, it's an unbelievably sordid history, and it's been somehow all swept under the rug. It's all been covered up, and the blame is now switched to the very party, the Republicans, who fought to end slavery, who opposed segregation, who proposed anti-lynching laws throughout the 20th century. So there's an unbelievable inversion that's gone on, and our film blows the lid on it.
Mm-hmm. But in today's America, where Republicans don't tend to support affirmative action and don't want, certain civil rights laws to be extended. That's what the other side uses to tar them with the, racist accusation, among other things.
Yeah, Megan, as late as the civil rights movement of the 60s, the civil rights movement would never have gone through without Republican support. More Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and the Fair Housing Bill of 1968, the Democrats. The main opposition to civil rights came from Democrats, and this, too, has been part of the history that most Americans don't know.
It's fascinating, Dinesh. We talked the last time you were here about your suggestion that they tried to shut you up and that the big criminals are still at large right after you got out of the overnight confinement, which is worth your while. We'll post that on Facebook.com so people can see it. It's always a pleasure, sir. Good to see you. And congratulations on your marriage.
Thank you very much.
Is it true Ted Cruz's dad married you two?
He did. Yes, he did the ceremony for us.
So we're
thrilled about that.
Very confused. But congratulations. Best wishes to you and your wife.
Thank you.
That's just a little tease for later. I'll find out why.
I can't wait to see this film. It's a documentary that exposes the hypocrisy. Because too often we're lectured by the left all of the time that we're intolerant. We're Islamophobia. It's a ridiculous word, Islamophobia. And then we're told we're racist, when actually, when you go into history and you look back at the roots and the beginnings of the Democratic Party, what you're seeing is that the very thing they're accusing you and me of, they are guilty. They have many, many skeletons in the closet. And so the documentary is to unmask the hypocrisy of the left, and at the same time of showing the history of hypocrisy, Dinesh will focus in on Hillary and her job and her role in stealing America, as he so poignantly points out. Well, for the last half an hour or more, I've been trying to build a case what I believe are the reasons that Hillary cannot be president and she's not qualified to become president. And so what I've done is present that case, and I'm going to leave that case at your doorstep, and you can do whatever you want with that. If we were to end the program right here, we would be doing a big disservice to you, the listener. And what I want to do right now on the remaining minutes of the program today, I want to talk about the subject of freedom. You see, all of the bickering back and forth, all of the mudslinging, all of the controversy, and yet at the core of all of it is the precious gift of freedom that you and I possess, the God-given right in our constitutional republic to, on November 8th, to go to that ballot box and to cast choice. You see, that's the operative word, choice. We have been given a responsibility, a choice, and I want to carefully go over that today, because it's so important. The first thing I want to do is I want to talk to Christians about that choice and about our responsibility, because we have been given by God a responsibility. There are biblical principles that will bring about God's blessing in our country. And I want to go over those principles, which tie right into voting. Number one, Christians are to influence the society they live in. Jesus taught that, Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 14. He says, you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? And then he goes on to say, it is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the salt of the earth. That means believers are to illuminate the path of righteousness, just like a light does down a physical pathway. You understand? You are the light of the world. The city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. And Jesus says that our responsibility is a civic responsibility. He also went on to say that, render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are not. We have a responsibility, a God-ordained task, to influence the society around us through voting. And that is a privilege. Number two, Christians are to pray for their governmental leaders. This is a command. Paul writes, therefore I exert, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and the giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceful life in all godliness and reverence. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God, our Savior. We are to pray supplications, prayers, intercessions, petitions, the giving of thanks. And notice the object of those prayers, all men, kings, for those that are in authority. Why do we offer these prayers? Number one, that we may lead a quiet and peaceful life in all godliness and honesty. And so we have a responsibility to affect our culture through voting, through praying, and also we are to respect governmental leaders. Now, this is a challenge. I want to go to what the Word of God says, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same, for he is God's minister to you for good. That is very important as we look at our obedience and respect to governmental leaders. Now, of course, if those leaders are infringing upon our rights of worship, then we don't respect and obey them. It's very, very important that we understand that. There's reasons we submit. There are the government's ordained of God for conscience sake. Very, very, very important. Now, we only refuse obedience when they cause us to disobey God. Now, here's an important point that we need to ponder on. Christians should elect to office those candidates who will uphold and mirror in their personal lives biblical righteousness. Those that reflect a Christian lifestyle and character. That is a command of Scripture. You can ask, what does this prospective leader worship or who? Does this prospective leader recognize God, place in his or her life? Does this person exercise his right and duty to worship the living God? Does this person take seriously his family relationships? Does this person value all human life? Does this person take marriage seriously? Are they faithful to their spouse? Is this person a person of integrity? And so this candidate that you're voting for needs to mirror these standards in the way they will enact policy, the things they will do, and how they view God, how they view the family, how they view and honor all life, if you will. And so, again, these principles are something to think about before you go vote. And I would encourage you to think seriously and pray seriously before you actually engage in voting. Now, I mentioned to you this precious freedom that you and I have in voting. I want to take us to a place called North Korea. And I want us to understand something about the process of so-called elections in North Korea. And this is from The Economist. This is an article I thought was very supportive of why elections are not free in North Korea. It's a very good article. Koreans go to the polls to elect deputies to the Supreme People's Assembly. Okay? And these members are chosen every 5 years. And you would say in a totalitarian communist dynasty, there are elections. Well, but wait a second. Voters in those countries like North Korea don't have much of a choice. Here's the way it works. They are presented with a single candidate in the district where they live. Okay, these candidates are chosen by the Democratic Front for the reunification of the fatherland, the governing coalition, which is controlled by the Workers' Party. I'm speaking of North Korea. There is only one box on the ballot, one box to tick. Abstaining or voting no would be a dangerous act of treason. Given that voting takes place in booths that don't provide any secrecy, and dissenting votes must be posted into a separate ballot box. And in this way, in North Korea, the population endorses these deputies, and it's really kind of a stuffed ballot box, if you will. Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un calls the shots. And he became the supreme leader there in North Korea in 2011 after the death of his father, King Jong II. And he absolute support and trust in this man. And really the ballot box is kind of a census. You only have one box to click on, if you will. So this is kind of what I would call a forced election. And they use it as a form of census. And it's a sham. It's a rigged election. It's held in autocratic countries like the North Koreans. And they try to portray a little bit of democracy. They're given democracy this kind of backhanded compliment with this outward appearance, but it's not real democracy. So you must vote in North Korea, but you only have one choice, and you know what choice that is. This is sad. So again, think of North Korea, think of the rigged elections, think of what I just read to you, and then also think about Iran. Iran is very similar, and they have a way of trying to give the appearance of democratic elections, and again, it's not a free and fair election. Just think of 2009. The entire population, most Iranians, really believed that Ahmadinejad, his re-election as president was the result of a rigged election. And you saw all of the protests. You saw all of the violence. They knew something was wrong. They knew that something was desperately wrong. Now, again, in Iran, you are required to vote because if you don't vote, you lose your government benefits if you don't show up at the election. And it's their way of keeping track of what you do in these elections. Now, this electoral system has some real structural problems. Candidates are constantly being disqualified on the basis of fundamentally flawed laws. And there's certain candidates that are vetted and given the right to be on the ballot, if you will. Council does this. It's amazing. They disqualified more than 6,500 candidates. And you have to be very supportive of the supreme leader and et cetera, et cetera. And they must not have a criminal record. They must pledge to adhere to the state's governing ideology. And it's really vetted by the supreme leader. He has on there who he wants to have on there. So this is anything but a free election in Iran. And, of course, they're very selective about their candidates, as I mentioned. If these candidates have anything to do with the 2009 violence, if they had anything to do with the uproar, the uprising, they're automatically disqualified. They will look into your entire record for that. It's amazing. And if they're a reformist candidate, they'll look carefully at you. And they will disqualify you through a process. And the Human Rights Watch that did this article is very, very important because they show that many of these candidates were only disqualified because of their political opinions. If you have a certain opinion that the supreme leader is against, out the door. You're not going to be on the ballot. So Iran does this because they don't want any more reprisals. They don't want any more dissent. They don't want any more demonstrations. So they purged the ticket of those candidates that had anything to do with the 2009 uprising. And if they have any kind of strong opinions that the Supreme Leader disagrees with, they're off the ticket. And so every candidate in Iran must demonstrate a practical belief in the Islamic faith and the sacred order of the Islamic Republic in Iran. They must also declare loyalty to the progressive principle of the absolute rule of the guardianship of the Juris Doctrine and to the Constitution. Wow. You go down this list. The ruling elite class has the final say of who is on that ballot. And if you go through this, it's horrendous. It's horrendous how they are vetted out. Iran's electoral system lacks independent oversight, significantly impairing access to the political process and citizens' freedom of choice. When the system scarcely tolerates peaceful dissent, even in the electoral process, the Iranian government robs its own citizens of a voice in governing their own affairs. Think about that when you go to the ballot box this November. Think about those in Iran who want to give the appearance of a democratic free election, but when you look closely behind the scenes, it's anything but democratic. Now, I also want to go. We've gone to North Korea. We've gone to Iran. Let's go to Pakistan. This is an article from the Guardian. I want to read this to you. I want you to get a sense of how women in Pakistan, are discriminated against when it comes to voting. In some of the most socially conservative regions of Pakistan, this weekend's local government elections will be men-only affairs. Local politicians and elders say parties contesting elections for district and village council seats in Hangu and parts of Malakand districts of the northwestern province of KP have struck deals barring women from voting. There are fears of similar arrangements across KP, a province bordering Afghanistan, where many Pashtun communities observe Pruta traditions so strict female candidates do not publish photographs on election posters. The cultural difficulties are always compounded by dire security in areas where the Taliban and other militant groups are active. Now, listen, in a parliamentary by-election in Lower Dur this month, none of the eligible 50,000 women in the constituency turned out to vote. One report said mosques broadcast warnings to women and polling stations were guarded by baton-wielding men who blocked the few women who did try to vote. And I could read on and on and on about this. The honorable judge in this case asked whether it was a fundamental right for women to vote. We said, indeed, it is a fundamental right and a constitutional right. That was the response to that. It goes on and on. It's discriminating against the right for women to vote. And the government, even though it's part of their constitution, bars women in most parts of Pakistan. They refuse to let women vote. And so women are barred from voting in these parts of Pakistan. And I'm doing all of this to make a point to you and me. This precious freedom that we have, that is in all of our constitutional documents, privilege that we have. Yes, we're embroiled in a very heated election year. Yes, there is much controversy. There is back and forth, mudslinging. There is fighting. There is dissent. And yet, in all of the things I'm describing to you, everything that I just said, we have that awesome responsibility to have the freedom to go vote. And as you heard me read the case histories of Pakistan, of Iran, of North Korea, I hope that in some ways this will spur you on to go out this November 8th and do what your God-given privilege allows you to do. We live in a free society, in a constitutional republic. And you and me have been given the awesome task of voting. We have a privilege and a freedom. And I think about my Iranian friends. I think about some of them that live here, and some of them that are not yet citizens, don't have the rights to vote, but they look forward to it. They can't wait to be able to go to the ballot box and cast their first vote. I know I've talked to them, and I said, isn't it great that you can go there, and it's not one candidate you're voting for, you're voting for the candidate of your choice. You're not being coerced if you don't show up, that your government benefits are taken away. You're not being monitored, supervised, like in North Korea. You have that freedom, that awesome responsibility, the thing that we take so much for granted. And when I think about the number of people who will stay at home, it's so sad and it's so tragic. And I hope today that I have encouraged you and motivated you to don't take your liberty and your freedom for granted. You could be living in a country where you don't have this freedom to vote, where the election is coerced or forced. But here you are living in the United States with the awesome privilege of going to vote. It is our God-given right. It is our constitutional right. And so I've made the case today why I don't believe Hillary Clinton should be our president. But again, you have the right to disagree. You have the right to say, I will vote for anyone of my choice, because you have that right. And while I might disagree with your choice, again, you have a choice. You have that precious choice to vote your conscience, to vote your principles, to make your choice. And that's beautiful. It's the most beautiful freedom in all of the world. I want to thank you so much for tuning into this special program today on the Cross in the Desert. Thank you so much, dear Patricia, for coming on and coming alongside and being so supportive. Thank you so much for your prayers and support for all of my Iranian friends. I want to say God bless you and have yourself an incredible weekend. And I will see you once again on Monday on the Cross in the Desert. Great.